This is File 7, Cycle 4. Today's date is December 5th, 2018. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Chris Williams, who is one of the Board of Selectmen in Salisbury. He's going to talk about his various activities as a Boy Scout leader and, let me see, what else have we got here? Boy Scout leader and his paper route when he was a young man. The Grove, when he worked there, political activities, and anything else he wants to talk about. But first we'll do the really difficult thing. What is your name?
My name is Chris Williams.
Okay.
I live in Lakeville, Connecticut, on Walton Street.
And you weren't born in town, were you?
No, I wasn't. My family, my mother and father, came to Salisbury and in the winter of 1971, my father was an engineer that was transferred. He worked for the Colgate-Palmolive Corporation, and he was transferred up here to oversee a newly acquired factory, Wash and Dry, which is in North Canaan.
Okay. And when you moved here as a child, where did you live?
My parents bought a house on the corner of Conklin and 41. It was the old Frank Wright house.
Is that a W-R-I-G-H-T?
W-R-I-G-H-T. And when we first came, the house wasn't ready, so we lived at the White Hart Inn.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was really a lot of fun. We lived there for about 3 weeks. And then the closing went through and everything, and we moved into the house.
Okay. What was the neighborhood like?
Well, the neighborhood was really great. We had the McCabe family, Rolly McCabe, lived across 44 from us. Grove Street was there. At the end of Grove Street, the Wrights, Debbie and Jeff, and Ronnie Wright, and they lived at the end. The Du Boises were up at the far end of the road. The Stevenses, we had the Parsons, the Olympic skier Parsons.
Oh,
he
yes.
lived up there, too.
Yeah, that was George's father.
Right, and
yeah.
We had the Stewarts, and they were on one corner, and Mrs. Josephine Winter, she had her hair salon, she was our neighbor to the north of us, and there was a lot of comings and goings at her place, because she operated a hair salon.
Yep. You had a paper route.
In 72, the last part of 72, 73, the Wrights, Debbie and Jeff, they used to deliver the Waterbury, and they didn't want to do it anymore. So we took on their paper route around town, the Waterbury Republican, and at the same time, we also picked up the Hartford Courant. So we delivered both papers in town.
It was Saturday collection day.
It was. And you know, there was a lot. We used to have a book, like a flip book, that had little tear-out tags in it, and you could, and you would leave a bill, and then you'd give them a receipt, was a tear-out tag, And then the paper, the overseer for the paper would come, and you'd have to have that money, and you know, for the week.
Oh, sure.
You know, you'd have to collect, and that was really, that was the worst part of the whole job.
Oh, yeah. Every paper boy that I've interviewed, that was the hard part.
You know, I think nowadays you just mail it in, or they charge you online, or whatever, and it's, you know, but back then, no, we had to.
You had to actually go to the door and ask
say,
for the money.
Yeah, and there were some people that were in arrears for a lot of weeks, you know, and it was just it was.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh, sure. So. I don't remember. I guess I took the Hartford Current when I was on Wells Hill, and I had the Wiggins boys were my paper boys. And I used to have mice in the apartment, so Kevin would come and he'd get rid of the mice, and then I'd pay him. You moved away after a while.
In 1976, they closed down Wash and Dry in North Canaan, and my father, who worked for Colgate-Palmolive, was transferred to another factory in Maine. Etonic Shoes. They bought the Etonic golf shoe factory in Gardner, Maine.
Oh.
So we transferred to Maine, and I lived in, they bought a house on the shore, West Bath. That's where I went to high school.
And then you joined the Marines.
And just out of high school, I joined the Marine Corps.
And that would have been 1980.
Well, I signed up in 1980. I was 17. My mother signed the papers for me to join. And then I went in 1981, July 9 of 1981, out of Portland, Maine.
Where was your training?
Paris Island, South Carolina. I was in 3rd Battalion, I was in I Company of 3rd Battalion, and those were some times down there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They make Marines down there. They made one of me.
They certainly did. It's supposedly the toughest branch in the service.
Well, we like to think that.
You're probably right. I had a cousin that was a Marine. I was scared to death of him. Nice guy, but, you know, he was... I'm a little kid, and he's a big man, and he's got this uniform on, and a gruff voice. Where were you deployed?
Well, after basic training, I went to my basic MOS school, which is Military Occupational Service. I believe that's what that stands for. Did a lot of acronyms in the service.
That's why I keep asking, because I don't know them.
And I went to Millington, Tennessee for Aviation Ordnance School. And it was funny, when I signed up, the recruiter said, oh, yeah, you're going to be working with computers, you know, you're going to be, because computers were the up-and-coming thing at the time, sure. You know, oh, you're going to be working with computers. Yeah, I worked with computers, but it was on the weapon systems on board an aircraft.
Ooh.
So it wasn't really, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, but, you know, that's okay. I made the best of it.
And you learned a lot.
Yeah, you know what, after my schooling, I was assigned to a fighter squadron out of the East Coast, which is in Beaufort, South Carolina. And there was, I believe, 4 sister squadrons down there, and they would rotate every 8 or 9 months to the Far East. And, gosh, to get to rotate, our new pilots would come in, and they would have to qualify air-to-air, air-to-ground. And the qualifications would take you all over the United States, you know, whether it's out west of Yuma, Arizona, or air-to-air was in Virginia Beach, and there were different deployments. We'd go out. Some of our pilots were good enough to go to Top Gun School out in San Diego. Other times we went down to Roosevelt Roads in Puerto Rico and had live missile shoots down there. And, you know, once they've got their certifications that they were combat ready, then everything would be embarked up, packed up, and we would go to Japan, the Far East, and we would be stationed over in Iwakuni, Japan. And from there, we would make deployments out to the Philippines and Korea. And one time we flew cover for the fleet when they went down the slot between Japan and Russia. They can't turn into the wind. This is during the Cold War.
Yeah.
And Misawa, Japan, we had a deployment go up there, and we flew, you know, live ordnance out to protect the fleet as they went down through the slot. So, you know, you get to see a lot of things, and it was a great experience. It really was.
Oh, it would be. It would be.
You know, for a, you know, a young guy to...
That's the best time to do it.
And it
really is.
You know, you've got to go to Hiroshima and see Ground Zero. I was able to go to the DMZ, up to Poomanjong. They had a tour up there, and I got to see that in North and South Korea. And in the building where they negotiated the truce, there's a line. And they said, this is the only time you can cross into North Korea without a national incident happening, So they let us cross into North Korea in the building.
Nifty.
You know, and then we got to go back. But, you know, that was like, you know,
That's a real great experience. Oh, my.
But, I got to see how they all live. It's something.
It gives you a perspective.
It really does. You really appreciate how good we have it here and how great things are here.
Yeah.
You know, even on a bad day here, it's great day compared to what some people have to endure.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that time and time again from the different men that I've interviewed. How long did you serve?
I got out in July of 85. That was my separation date, July 9, or July 10. So July 10 of 85. And I came back home. I had gotten married, but the last year of my service, I had come back and rekindled a relationship with a girl that I had met in grammar school at Salisbury Central. She was a friend of my sister's, and we'd stayed in touch off and on. And you know,
that
after
would be Patty Hahn.
That's Patty Hahn.
Yeah.
After I after you get around the world and you see a lot of things, you know, you kind of ask yourself, really, where do I want to mm-hmm. end up, and what kind of person do I want to share my life with?
And you came to Salisbury.
Yeah, she. You know what? What a great place.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you said that you had 4 years of active service and 2 years reserve.
Inactive. Right. Inactive. I did an inactive reserve the first year before I went in. I signed up a year before when I was 17, and then I did a year after. It's maintain uniforms, and mm-hmm. you go on a short list. If there's a national emergency, they can reactivate you right away, and they have the personnel to take care of the issue.
Ah, okay.
So.
And what was your rank when you came out?
I was an E4 corporal.
What's an E4?
E4 is an enlisted rank of the fourth step, and it's two hashes with cross rifles underneath it. Two hashes above with a cross rifle.
Okay.
It's a non-commissioned officer, the first mm-hmm. step of a non-commissioned officer.
What year did you return to Salisbury?
85.
And you were already married?
I was married, yeah. That was one of the reasons I got out of the service, was I was married a year, and I had a son that was 6 months old, and I'd probably seen my wife and my son maybe about a month. Month and a half, maybe 2 months.
Yeah, well, you kind of wanted to spend more time with them.
Yeah,
right. Oh, sure. Okay, now you wanted to be in the fire department here.
I did want to be in the fire department. You know, that was a big thing. The fire company was always a big deal. When I was a kid and in Boy Scouts, and there was a lot of firemen around, and I always wanted to be in the fire department. But I had a job with the state. I just got a new job with the state after I got out of the service. And, of course, we're on call in the wintertime, 7 months out of the year, which is, mm-hmm. you know, 24/7, and it's all weather dependent.
Sure.
But the bylaws of the Lakeville Hose Company is if you miss so many meetings, then you're automatically out of the fire company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that year we had a real heavy snowfall, and it seemed that the snowfall was happening every night, every time of the month when the meeting of the fire company was.
Yep.
So one of the fire officers came up to me and said, you know, you've missed a couple meetings. Are you, you know, what's going on? So I explained it to him, and he said, well, they're talking about they might vote you out. And I said, well, you know what? Maybe I just better resign and be in good standings, mm-hmm. you know. So I did resign.
But then you went on the fire commission.
But then later on I got a chance to help the fire company, because I know a lot of the people that are on the fire company I went to grammar school with.
Sure.
You know, I know them from Salisbury Central.
Yep.
And, you know, they're the ones that are the higher-ups and officers in the fire company now.
Yep.
So when the opportunity came to get onto the fire commission board, gosh, I jumped at it. I said, you know what, well, maybe I can't.
I can help this way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I can't make every fire, and I can't make, you know, because of the overtime that I have to work, I can mm-hmm. give back in the fire commission.
How long were you on the fire commission?
I think about 12 years.
Okay. And what is its responsibility? What does it do?
When I first got on, the fire commission was really kind of a totally separate entity from the town. They're a taxing authority for the water district of Lakeville that has all the fire hydrants. They oversaw the old firehouse and community field. They were tasked, they owned that too, which is the baseball field.
Yep. Yep.
So, and while I was on it, they transferred into the new firehouse, and they sold the old firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the fire commission oversees the fire budget. They watch over the expenditures of the fire budget.
Mm-hmm.
They are watchers of the fire truck fund, which the town contributes to buy new fire engines. And
which are very expensive.
Yes, very expensive. And fuel and water. It costs water to have the fire hydrants and everything, so those are all bills that the fire commission oversees.
Is a fire truck more expensive than an ambulance?
Yes. Well, I think some ambulances can be more expensive than some fire trucks.
That's true.
Depends on exactly what you want in certain fire truck or certain
ambulance. I didn't phrase that correctly, but yes, you're right, because I've done some research on the new ambulance that they got, which was, they got a refurbished one, and then they upgraded it for Because the state of Connecticut has a lot of rules and regulations.
Right, yeah.
All right. And for pickup money, you went to work at the Grove.
My kids were, I had three children, and my oldest was all done with college, and my two younger ones, my two daughters, they were in college at the time, and gosh, you know, summertime, there was no overtime from the winter,
no.
So, and, you know, usually at the end of summer, it was go back to college.
And you needed money.
That's right, that's when a big expenditure happens. You know, textbooks are outrageously expensive, and, you know, so.
Everything's outrageously expensive.
So I figured, you know, how could I
get a little extra.
Supplement my income, you know? Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what? I'll see if I can work at the Grove across the summer, and we'll bank that money and you know, use it in the fall.
And when did you go to the Grove?
About
2012?
2012. I worked there 2 summers.
And who was the manager?
Stacy Dodge was the manager that hired me. Gosh, what a great person,
wonderful.
You know, and I can remember when she interviewed me, because I went to grammar school with her.
I had her in my fourth grade.
Yeah, I, you know, and I knew the family, you know, skiing at Hobnob Hill and Bittersweet and skating at Hotchkiss, you know, Schmidt Wehrink at Hotchkiss Thursday nights. We used to have ice skating there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember she interviewed me. She goes, God, you know, why do you want to work at the Grove? So I explained to her what was going on. She goes, I only have one thing that I want you to know. She goes, this is 100% for the kids.
Yep.
That is the number one priority, is the children here. Their safety, and that they are protected and that they have a good time. That is what we're here for.
Mm-hmm. What a wonderful thing.
The adults come second. And you know what? She's absolutely
right. She is. The Grove is for kids.
And I couldn't tell you when I was working there how many kids, adults that were coming back, and they said, God, I grew up here, or I was here, you know, for 2 or 3 years, and it looks the same, and can I come in? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're supposed to charge them admission. And she always used to say, you know what? When people like that come up, let them come in. If, you know,
it's memories.
It's right.
It's walking,
you know,
down memory lane.
And we always used to say, welcome home. That's what we always said.
Oh, good.
Welcome home.
Good.
You know, I can remember Teddy McHugh.
Oh,
he
gosh.
He came back one time, and he was like, I don't know if I should, you know, he used to swim the lake, you know, and swim. And I said, Teddy, you're always welcome here. You're a townie, you know.
Yeah, Theodopolis.
Welcome home.
Yeah.
Welcome home.
Oh, lovely.
You know, so.
What shift did you have?
I used to do the night shift. It would be from 4, because I worked till 4, so it would be 4:30 or 5 until closing, which would be 8. And then I worked on Saturdays. I would work 2 to closing, and sometimes Sundays. And there was the holiday weekends. We'd work on the holidays, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was mainly at the gate, you know, collecting at the gate or work the cash register, sell ice cream, get down the canoes if they rent them, and boat rentals, pump out boats, you know, just whatever, you know, whatever. And at nighttime, we had to clean the bathrooms and mop the area, too. So
oh, yes.
I always have to make the place clean.
You have to. Boy Scouts. Now, I guess you got into Boy Scouts because of Andy.
That's right. My oldest, he joined Cub Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be involved. I was a soccer coach for him, so when he joined Scouting, you know, Cub Scouting, you know, Pat said, well, why don't you get involved with Scouting? I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's a good transition.
Right. So I got involved, and the charter was held by St. John's Church. Reverend Bevins was the Cub Master, and I said I wanted to get involved. And he said, good, you can be the assistant Cub Master. And I was, well, wait a minute, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure, well, you know. No, he goes, no, you'll be okay. So little did I know, in the next couple of years, he stepped away from the whole thing, and then I became the Cub Master and held the Blue and Gold Banquet and, you know, arranged the awards for the, you know, the Wolf Pack and the Cub Scouts and the Weeblows. Those are the three that the Cub Masters and looks over overseas. And the
I lost one of them.
There's the Cub Wolf? Scouts,
okay.
Wolf, Weeblow.
And Weeblows, okay. Okay. And there's lions and tigers and something else. little ones.
Oh, tiger cubs.
Tiger cubs.
Those are the, like, just post-kindergarten, you know, the ones that, you know, they're mostly, they have a good time just running around on the playground, and that's our deal, you know. An organized play group, but,
that's part of being together,
and enjoying it, and being a part of something.
And not being orchestrated all the time. And I'm assuming that you stayed in it as long as Andy did, so that would be how long?
We transitioned from Cub Scouts into Scouting, and the charter was held at St. John's for a little bit, and then St. John's got out of it, and then the Masonic Lodge in Lakeville held the charter for the final couple of years that I was in it. And I transitioned into being the Scoutmaster.
And that would be PAC 7?
That was, yeah. It was PAC 7, and then it became Troop 7. So it was just 7.
Who was your Cub Master?
You said my Cub Master, when I was in Lakeville and Grammar School, I joined, you know, the Scouts. It was Dick Barton.
Oh.
And they used to be held in the upstairs of the firehouse, of the old firehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember, you know, Freddie Bushnell was in it, and Darren Reed, and myself, and Peter Kuba, and there was a whole bunch of guys that were in it, you know, our age group.
I know them all.
Yeah.
I had them all.
Yeah. Bless his soul, you know, Dick Barton. We hiked up over the Appalachian Trail from Salisbury to Falls Village, and spent the night out on the trail. So that was
a thrill.
Oh yeah. We were really camping, you know.
Oh sure. Well, that's part of it.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
So.
Wack Forest is that? That's Wack, for scouting.
I believe that was donated to the town. It's a tract of land over off of 112 that was donated to the town for the express purpose of scouting, for scouting use. And that was always a big camp out, too. We always used to go there. And when I was a scout master, I made sure that I took our scouts to Wack Forest, and we camped out there one night, too. So, had a bonfire.
Only one night?
Well, you know.
Oh, Lord, we used to go out to Camp Marion White up in Pittsfield, and it was a full weekend.
All right.
You didn't sleep either. I didn't sleep. Now, you gave me a really good reason why there's no Boy Scout activity in Salisbury.
Right. When I was a scout master, I used to go down to Torrington to attend meetings, and they used to always say, well, why don't you bring your scouts down to Camp Wacoman? Camp Wacoman was off of 183 down in Winsted, on the Torrington-Winsted town line, and they had a lake there, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is nice. It's nice. And they said, how come, you know, none of your scouts are part of our, you know, summer camping program? And the truth of it is that our rec department in our town is so great and grand that it really, you know, makes their camp pale.
Yeah, I mean, we have great rec program.
And, you know, they didn't realize that.
Mm.
You know, we have the town grove, and we have sailing and kayaking and baseball camp and tennis camp. And you know, it's just a great little league. And we have all that up here. And to make our scouts get on a bus and drive 45 minutes to Camp Wacoman, you know, one way.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not something that I...
There's no point.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Did you ever do Pinewood Derby?
We sure did. Yeah, that was, we had it at the Grove Building, the old Grove Building.
Okay.
And we got the track, was handed down to us from another scoutmaster, because a lot of the scouting things are handed down one scoutmaster to the other. And it was a 3-track car track, and boy, there's nothing more exciting than a Pinewood Derby. I'm telling you, the kids get so amped up, and even the adults do, too.
Oh, sure.
It's such a great thing.
Oh, sure.
And Paul Roy was my assistant scoutmaster. He's passed on now. And he stored the track at his house, and we used to set it up at the Town Grove. And we'd always pull a mother and a father who had their sons that were in scouting, they would be at the finish line to call it. Of course, now they have electronic timers that automatically...
Then they
didn't. Back when we were doing it, it was just I. And holy moly, I wouldn't want to be those guys. You know, and some tracks were faster than other tracks.
Sure.
You know, the other two. And,
sure.
You know, they'd have to draw for the track. And then they'd, you know, so it would be... And you can't touch the cars once they're weighed in. And it was, yeah, it was quite a thing.
Oh, sure.
It was a lot of fun.
Sure.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's go on to the Board of Assessment Appeals. Why did you join that one?
Well, I wanted to get involved in politics in our town. There comes a time when you realize that the town has given so much to you and your family, and, you know, it's time to pay it back, or pay it forward, as they would say. You know, we're all just, we're truly just custodians, you know, and
yeah.
We have to step up and ensure that what we hand down to the next generation is what we've been given, and maybe make it a little better if we can.
Certainly, you know, that's not worse.
Right, exactly. So I wanted to get involved with politics in town, so I approached one of the political parties in town and said, you know, geez, I'd be interested. And they said, well, we have an opening on the Board of Assessment Appeals. Would you be interested in running? And I said, well, sure.
And when was that?
Oh, gosh, that was...
14?
2014. I'm glad you took those notes. I'm glad you did last time because I...
It makes it easier.
Right.
It makes it easier. As you explained it to me, if I don't agree with my assessment...
Right.
And I can't work it out with the assessor.
That's correct.
Then I go to...
The board, you... What happens is if you are have your property or your vehicle or, you know, your property is taxed by the town, if you don't agree with the assessment that's been given you, you try to work it out with the assessor. And if the assessor is, you know, says, no, this is right and you're wrong, and you still think you're right and wrong, you have recourse.
Yeah.
You know? She's not the assessor, or they aren't the final say in the matter. There's a body of citizens that are elected to the Board of Assessment Appeals that you can appeal to. You have to make an appointment.
Yeah.
There's a certain time frame, and everyone knows, you know, the assessor knows, and they assemble what they have, and then they come in and at the board and express their opinion. And then the board discusses it and renders a decision as to yes
so
or no.
It's a decision made by your peers.
You're right, exactly. And it's it can be used in a court of law, so it's almost a testimony. Mm-hmm. And if you don't agree with the Board of Assessment Appeals, you can appeal it to the judicial system, and a judge can hear it. And some people do. Take it higher.
Yeah, well.
And sometimes they win, and
sometimes they
lose.
Don't. If I don't get what I want, I'll go someplace else. No.
Right.
Yeah, I know the attitude.
But you know what? But
that's the choice.
You have to. You know, that's right.
It's part of democracy.
That's right, exactly. Everyone should have the chance to question.
Yeah. How long did you serve on that board?
I was on that, I believe, 4 years. Did I tell you that?
You told me 4 years.
Okay, 4 years.
Who's the chairman?
John Harney Jr. was the chairman. At the
he's
time.
Fun.
Yeah.
I have some wonderful stories from him.
He was... a lot of times when you... This is a good story. A lot of times when you hear cases, you're really not supposed to... You're just supposed to take in the evidence from the people that are presenting their case. And then after you're done, you debate amongst yourself. It's open to the public, but you can debate at another meeting.
Yeah.
We go case by case and debate it openly. And the public's invited. They can hear our debate. But we were hearing a case on someone, and John Harney Jr. started asking these questions. And it's kind of like you're kind of showing the hand of the town. You have to be real careful that you don't, you know, let's just hear the evidence and, you know, protect the town's interests as well as the personal people. And I reached under the table with my foot, and I, like, banged him in the shin. He went, oh! I wasn't real careful when I banged him. He's like, oh, I guess I have to be quiet now. He was the chairman. Oh, that was funny.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
But he's a Marine also, so.
I know.
You know,
I know.
We got along good.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, his dad was a Marine. Paul was a Marine. Oh, yeah. Now, Board of Finance is interesting.
After, well, I was still on the Fire Commission at the time, as well as the Board of Assessment Appeals, and there became an opening on the Board of Finance. And I said, well, geez, I'd like to be a selectman,
this is the stepping stone
to go up and to learn the budgetary steps and how everything is laid out and how the comptroller works and how the tax money is, cut up and if something happens, how is it taken care of and those are all things that the Board of Finance deals with. And they question expenditure, they question line items, they question how the tax dollar is being spent. And they're an elected board of townspeople. And one of the things, once I got on and I had to get off of all the other boards, because they don't want any conflict of ethics.
No conflict of interest, right.
So, because the Fire Commission, that was a paid position, so, I had to resign off that, and I had to resign off the assessment appeals, because the assessment appeals is you're saying how much money can come in, so you're not going to say how much money is coming in and spend it.
No, that's not the way it works. No. And when you're handling other people's money, which the tax collection is, you have to be very rigorous.
Very transparent.
Oh, definitely.
And that's a good thing, too.
Oh, yeah.
But Bill Willis was the chairman.
Yeah.
He's the chairman of the Board of Finance when I was on there. And it was really good, a very big learning, steep learning curve for me,
Yeah, it would be.
But, I really did get to see how things were run. And there's been something that's been passed down from Board of Finance to Board of Finance. And that's kind of an attitude. And I like to call it the Carl Williams attitude, because he was the chairman for such a long time in our town.
Yeah.
And the Carl Williams attitude, he was a big canoer.
I know.
And he always used to say, we do not in Salisbury want white water. We always want easy paddling. And that is the mantra that I always took to the Board of Finances. We don't want any ups or downs. We want to just keep things very smooth, very easy, and
it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, and that's why our mill rate is so low. It's with the lowest in the state.
Are we now the lowest?
Yes, we are the lowest, and it has to do with something like
11 mil.
Good oversight and quality management. And,
oh yeah, and it works throughout all of the different boards that I've interviewed. It's the same thing. You all work together as a well-oiled machine.
Salisbury is so, we get along so well here. There are some towns.
We try to.
Yeah, I really do. It's the attitude.
Yeah.
And I think the other towns are jealous of it. I've heard them say, oh, you Salisbury people.
Well, I remember that on negotiations. And that was back in the 70s. That we had a reputation of getting along.
But we do.
Yeah, well, we work. You have to work at it.
It's a great place. That's
you have to compromise. You have to see both sides of an issue. And you have to be fair. And that's what people seem to want to do in town.
I agree.
Which makes it such a wonderful place to live.
Yes. And a great place to raise a family. Beautiful place.
Yes, I'm sure it is. I just got the kids.
You had the biggest family of all.
Oh, boy.
Teacher. So you saw that's your kids. That's all your kids.
Oh, they were always, and they still are.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're 60, they're still my kids.
Right, exactly.
And I get a kick out of it, because when I do interviews with any of my kids that are the fire department or the ambulance or whatever, we usually hark back to, boy, you were tough, but I learned a lot.
That's right.
And that's important.
Yeah.
There were rules which they needed to follow. There were consequences and there were rewards. And just
that's
like,
life.
That's life. If you
it's a microcosm of life. Mm-hmm. Work hard, follow the rules, and get the reward.
And I always had good classes.
Right.
Always. The kids wanted to do well, they wanted to learn. And they weren't all always academic, but I didn't always do academics. I would take them out in the woods and we'd learn about trees and by the bark and the leaves and that sort of stuff, because it would make more of an impact than just reading a book.
Right, right.
And there was I did a lot of hands-on stuff with
hands-on
the kids.
Hands-on knowledge, yeah.
Yeah, because that's so important.
And sometimes that's the only way certain kids learn.
Oh, sure. You Everybody know? Has right. a different learning style. Right. And I would try to hit all of the different learning styles throughout the year so that everybody got something.
Right.
And it must have worked because they still talk to me. Why did you decide to run for selectman?
Well, like I said before, I think that we're just custodians and the town had given me so much, I just wanted to step forward and, you know,
give back.
Give back, you know. Our first selectman now, Curtis Rand, he's going to be 67, I think, or 68, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
he's done it for a long
time. Yeah, I think he's been in there 12 years.
I think so.
So, I mean, his generation, they've carried the torch. Now it's time for the next generation to carry the torch, you know, and pass it on to the next generation after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much like scouting, you know. Progression of the next people that come along and, you know, you're just, you know, you oversee and take care of what you can hand out.
You are a steward.
Right, exactly.
Do you have specific duties as a select person?
Well, I'm chairman of the Pathways and Sidewalks Committee. We're working on connectivity in the town. I'm on Rec Parks and Forest. I'm a member of that. I'm on Scenic Road Commission. I sit in on the Grove Committee. I would say I'm mostly a sounding board. Aside from those committees, I'm a sounding board for the first selectman.
Wonderful.
You know, I give my point of view to him and, you know,
everybody needs a sounding board.
Right. And,
yeah.
And, you know, our other selectman, Don Malin, he's great too, you know. He gives his point of view too, you know. It's been a really good experience and a good board.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Very diverse.
Yes.
A very diverse board.
I did Don Malin probably 4 years ago.
Man, he's so interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what he's done and his diving and school you know, and Curtis, gosh, he lived in France. He went to high school in France.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and his grandmother was a great painter. And
oh, yeah.
You know, that's a big name. Rand is a big name. I can remember delivering papers to his father in his law office next to the church. His law office was in the red building next to the church.
Yeah.
And he used to have this monster big desk. And I'd go in and collect. I was so scared of him. He had his glasses, and he'd always look down over his glasses.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Jake Rand.
Yeah. Ellen Emmett Rand painted a portrait of Reverend Henry Kiera, who was my brother-in-law.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, it is a small world, isn't it?
It is a small world. It is a small world. Would you be interested in running for selectman again?
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely.
Oh, good.
You know what? I really like the people of Salisbury.
And good people.
Yeah, and you know what? They're honest people, you know, and if you're honest with them, I think they're honest with you, and it's, you know what?
You get what you give.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not above wearing myself on my sleeve. They can see it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, you know, we all get along. I'm ready to continue the generational.
Where do you want the town to go?
You know, I'd love to see a group of young people to get involved with the town. And I'm sure some of it is reaching out. I'd like to see some technology get into town. High-speed internet, some fiber optics, you know.
Talk to Dan McMullen.
Right. But you know what? A lot of cutting-edge technology is not cutting-edge when they're installing it anymore. I mean, you know.
No.
So, you know, I'm not sure that that's where we want to put our money yet. And, you know, it's hard to justify raising any of the mill rate for something like that for people that they don't access the internet that way. They don't need that kind of access to the internet. So it's hard. You have to wait until the right generation gets in the right position to say, yes, we want that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any seminars where you actually talk to young people in town?
Well, I participate in Salisbury Central. They have like a syllabus up there where they talk to their program. They talk about their program, or
I'm talking about high school or college age that would be more willing to give ideas about what the town should have, needs, that sort of thing.
I tried to start a youth retention committee in town. Mm-hmm. It didn't really get traction yet, but I'm waiting for the right time to reactivate that.
It will.
You know, mm-hmm. It's on the back burner. There's a man by the name of Joe Woodard who's under Mountain Weavers up on Route 41. He's a real nice guy. And me and him together have put together we're working behind the scenes on a youth retention committee.
Good.
But, mostly to draw in maybe FFA and, you know, we have mm-hmm. gardens around town and, you know, at different times try to reach into the youth youth community and bring them more in line, you know.
Because you've got such a wonderful summer youth program.
Yeah, we have to instill that this is yours.
Yeah.
This is all of your, you see all the buildings around and everything in town, this is all yours. Mm-hmm. And once they realize that, hey, you know, I'm a stakeholder in all of this. Yeah. I really am a stakeholder.
Which is why I try to get some of the kids to do the oral history. Because it is their town, and it's their future. And if you get them to buy into it, they're protective.
Right.
And they want to help. I mean, that it doesn't make any difference whether it's a fourth grader or whether it's high school or whether it's college. If they buy into the program, they want to make it work. And
I agree.
That's important.
I agree.
That's important.
Once they realize, that it's theirs.
Now, you have an interesting hobby with your metal detecting.
I started metal detecting, I'd say, it was back in the 70s, the late 70s. And I got away from it for a while. And then I would say the last 10 years, I got back into it again. And there's a local person, Duck Stevens, mm-hmm. or Donnie Stevens.
Yeah.
And myself, we...
That's
do
Patty's husband.
Patty
it?
Stevens, yep. the secretary at the grammar school.
Yep.
And we got back into it. He'd been into it, and my wife, he came in, because my wife's the town clerk, he came in and was getting a burn permit, and she said, would you please take my husband metal detecting? I'm sick of him, you know. So he got in touch with me, and we formed a friendship, and we do a lot of metal detecting, and we go a lot of places, and mostly Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
Very seldom do we travel out of Salisbury. There's so much history in this town, and we're real big history buffs. You know?
Both of you.
Oh yeah, we love it. And he's into arrowheads too. He's a he was a big arrowhead hunter. Him and George Bushnell. They used to go arrowhead hunting because George is Patty's father. Because Patty Bushnell.
I wish I'd gotten George, but I didn't. But I didn't start this until after he passed.
So. Oh, what a great guy.
Oh, yeah. I had Freddie in school. You didn't have Patty, but I had Freddie. And I knew George.
You know, I went to his memorial mass, and here's something about George. They were talking about his World War II service. He was in the Army in the World War II, mm-hmm. and he liberated one of the concentration camps.
Yep.
Never would I have ever thought that of him. Never did he talk about that or say anything about his service or anything, you know. He was just such a, he would help anybody
he
at
was
any
so
time.
Modest.
He was such a great guy.
Yep, he was.
Know?
Absolutely wonderful.
And he ran the Memorial Day Parade when I was a kid. I can remember him doing him and Dick Barton.
Yeah.
My gosh, what a great guy, you know. And that was such a big deal when I was a kid to watch that parade.
Oh, yeah.
And now I get to march in it.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
That's great.
Oh, warning. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this interview before we close?
I don't think so. I think we've covered quite a bit.
Okay.
I really enjoy it. And,
wonderful. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Jean. Have a great evening.